On today's Josh Nason's Punch-Out, I continue my pro wrestling year review series with a stop in March. Myself and Wrestling Observer editor Ethan Renner go over everything that happened in the month of March, which included Tony Khan announcing that he was purchasing Ring of Honor, Big E suffering a broken neck during a match on SmackDown, Triple H officially announcing his in-ring retirement, and all kinds of other stuff as well. The month of March in the year of pro wrestling, right now on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Well, rejoining me for the first time in a year, basically a year, Wrestling Observer editor, superstar, Frasier lover, all things in between, Baltimore Orioles fan, Ethan Renner's back. Ethan, welcome back. Even though we've been talking for a few minutes, I'm going to welcome you back so all the good listeners can feel that you're welcoming them into your hearts and your life, so to speak.
Josh, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
It's good. It's always good when we ask how each other's doing on air when the microphone, the tape machines are rolling, even though we've talked for a while. Podcasters all around the world do that. It's a
very common thing. Professional.
Very professional. This background's very professional. People can't see it. But Frasier, the Seattle, Washington. Of course, Frasier is coming back. A lot of things have happened with old Frasier Crane since you and I last spoke last year, huh?
Yeah, there's a reboot that has officially been ordered to series on Paramount Plus. No release date or anything there. But Kelsey Grammer back as Frasier, and I think otherwise pretty much a new cast. And I've pitched unsuccessfully pitched a Frasier podcast to a notable wrestling personality. So strange Frasier here, but yeah, good times.
Yeah, I would someday. I hope that story makes it in your book. I know it, and a few other people know it. But for the sake of those involved, we won't share it. I will say I still have faith it's going to happen someday myself, but. That's just me, a faithful person like that, I guess.
We'll see. This is a year where I pitched two different podcasts to two different notable wrestling personalities, including one WWE Hall of Famer. And both were met with like, no, it's okay. Not this time.
Someday. 2023 is going to be your year. I can feel it.
I hope so, man.
Maybe go to an Impact Hall of Famer instead. Start small, kind of build up, you know?
Yeah, that might work.
It might. So we're going to talk about the month of March. And as Ethan was telling me before, he got a good month. It was a good poll. This is a lot of random shit happened this month and a lot of things kind of set up the rest of the year. Some things that we still don't really have answers for. It's funny how that happens. You know, we have all these big developments and, oh, yeah, this is going to lead to this and this is going to lead to this. And we sit here as we record this at the end of November, and some of the shit just never developed, or we're still kind of waiting. And one of those, I will say, as I do every time, I scan through 552 headlines to get to this. I had a nice export and was reviewing all that. But yeah, 552 headlines. This is kind of the best of the bunch. There's always a few little things here and there that don't make it, but this is kind of the bigger stuff. And probably the biggest thing of the month, we'll start with AEW this time, is Ring of Honor was purchased by Tony Khan. So he had talked about delivering his big announcement on AEW Dynamite, and the big announcement was, and he doesn't appear on Dynamite or really on AEW TV that much, but purchasing Ring of Honor from Sinclair Broadcast Group. And that was a big announcement. He announced that in Jacksonville. CM Punk was relieved that Vince McMahon did not buy Ring of Honor. He did some interviews about that afterward. Khan at the time, or around that time, said he planned to continue Ring of Honor wrestling operations to handle the creative for Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor. That was coming up, obviously, in April. That was already announced, but essentially he was taking that over and basically confirmed that he was going to still follow through with it due to commitments, and that he was going to relaunch the Ring of Honor weekly TV show following Supercard of Honor. As we sit here just after Full Gear, there's still no announcement on our Ring of Honor TV show, and Tony Khan saying that after Final Battle, he's going to, the team's going to reassess kind of where things are at with the company and all that good stuff. You know, this was a little bit of a surprise. It's kind of, you know, people had these wild guesses what this big announcement was going to be. He said it was comparable to when, you know, CM Punk did the United Center thing and returned. I don't know if it was that big, but certainly it was. It's notable in the wrestling space. And what do you remember from the announcement and kind of everything that happened afterward?
I remember, as with a lot of big AEW announcements, I remember a lot of hype the day of, and I remember immediate confusion about what Tony was going to do with the ROH brand. And here we are, as you mentioned, 8 months later, and we still really don't know exactly what Tony's going to do with the ROH brand. At minimum, he purchased a valuable video library and some intellectual property, and he has continued to kind of run Ring of Honor on AEW television simultaneously since then, which I think has led to some... AEW's television product, I don't think is everything outside of the ring is not for me. I love the in-ring in AEW. Everything outside the ring is just not for me. And I think kind of the scatterbrained inclusion of Ring of Honor into the AEW product, this was kind of the beginning of an even more chaotic, unfocused time in AEW television. I think you can point to one of two things, and it's one we'll talk about later here, what Cody leaving AEW and or Tony buying Ring of Honor. And I think one or both of those things kind of contributed to the unfocused nature of that a lot of the angles in the booking in AEW/ROH can have. But I remember just being confused. Is Tony going to, does he have a deal to run the TV? Is he going to, does he still have the Sinclair stations, et cetera, et cetera?
Yep.
We would find some of that stuff out, but as you mentioned, still no TV show here 8 months later.
Yeah. I think my assumption, if Tony Khan was to take the truth serum, which I would love, you get the real story on some stuff, would be that I feel that he thought a TV deal would be a lot easier to come from given where streaming was, given all the different options that somebody's going to be like, yes, we'll take this. And maybe even to say, you know, Sinclair would be an option, or maybe he thought Time Warner was going to be an option, or, you know, whatever, Warner Brothers Discovery, Warner Bros. At the time, whatever. Sure. I'm sure he thought it was going to be a lot easier to make it happen. And I think when that didn't happen, I would have to kind of retrace the steps in terms of when, you know, the Ring of Honor title started making their way to AEW Dynamite to kind of see maybe what time frame that was, to see if maybe that might be an interesting theory. But I think to your point, just that chaotic, I think, is a good way to describe it, because essentially he booked two companies into one because he's booking two different sets of titles. I mean, you think of how confusing that can be sometimes with when he's booking one set, but to then add another company that there's questions about anyway, and to have it kind of included, and you're not only having to push AEW pay-per-views, but then as it came around, he's starting to push another company's pay-per-views that he also owned. And I think we're so in the wrestling bubble that I think a lot of this stuff, we just kind of roll with the punches with, because we have to, because this is kind of just the way shit is. I always want to talk to people that aren't really involved in like internet shit, or aren't really involved in like offset, be like, I want to ask them, just some casual AEW fans, regular Dynamite watchers, maybe this is the only thing they watch, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of all this? Does it make sense? Do you like it? I've always kind of curious about that, because I think wrestling fans were so used to, especially in this era, just getting deluged with stuff, and then we'll figure it out afterward. But I wonder if some people are just like this. I don't know what's happening right now. I wonder if that's the case.
I don't know. I wonder if people Are there people that just kind of passively watch this stuff?
I think there has to be. In the million or so, 900,000 million, but there has to be people that aren't like us, so to speak. You know what I mean? There has right. to be, right?
Right, right. Yeah, maybe that's that that 250,000 plus or minus
yeah.
that that make up the difference in the really low dynamite numbers and the high dynamite numbers. Who you know, if they're home on Wednesday night and they turn the television on, they'll watch it, and they don't, they're on their phone or their computer or whatever during the show, and they don't need to try to make sense of anything.
Yeah. Let's go to Revolution. That was AEW's big pay-per-view for the quarter here. Hangman Page retaining the AEW title over Adam Cole. We had Jon Moxley defeating Bryan Danielson. CM Punk winning the dog collar match over MJF. That was a great and a really bloody match. It was a trios match with Sting, Darby, and Sammy taking on the Andrade Hardy Family Office trio. That was right before the main event, and it was just, again, one of these Sting matches that just is just chaotic, and it's awesome, and it's just, it's a lot of fun, and, you know, Sting is, you know, in his 60s and still doing this shit. Chris Jericho picking up a win over Eddie Kingston. That was a really hard-hitting match. It was their first ever $1 million gate, and that was for Revolution. That would be one of many they would have during the course of the year. A new women's title belt was announced. Wardlow won the Face of the Revolution match, just starting to continue his march towards some bigger stuff. Around 110,000 streaming buys, and the pay-per-view in general is looking to be essentially the second best ever in AEW history. Swerve Strickland officially signed with the company. He came out and kind of signed his contract on the pay-per-view. And then also William Regal made his debut, and it was revealed that he was going to be both an on-screen character and then also in a backstage role as well. So a lot of news. You had some debuts, which Tony Khan's like to do and doesn't seem to, you know, kind of getting less and less as the year went on. But Revolution kind of just had a little bit of everything, and it was Hangman Page and Adam Cole, not necessarily like super pay-per-view drawing stars, but again, this kind of post-Omega era in a sense that he was still recovering from injury. We had no idea when he was going to be back. It was kind of just a lot of these pay-per-views are like a group effort. Everyone kind of kicks in with their own thing. There's, you know, 15 matches on a show, you know, it's a marathon to get through. But at the end of the day, they're pretty good, and there's some interesting news usually coming out of them, and this was a good way to start the year, for me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, AEW pay-per-views almost always deliver in the ring. Adam Cole, especially in the early part of the year, Adam Cole and Britt Baker were the stars of AEW television. They were seemingly on every show. They got consistent promo time, and it's like, well, I got no problem with that, by the way. But by the way, these guys are the most pushed people on your television. Maybe they should be the champions of their respective divisions. But that's a minor nit to pick. The in-ring at pay-per-view is excellent. Everything they've done with Sting has been like picture perfect. The way they use him, the way that the frequency with which he wrestles, the things that he does. Sting is, I have no complaints with anything they've done with Sting, and the first big $1 million gate, which CM Punk can claim credit for. That's Swerve right. is a signing to me at the time. I think I maybe kind of was underwhelmed a little bit, or just thought, well, he's a guy on the roster. I think the Swerve stuff with Keith Lee, with the exception of the angle where Swerve kidnapped Billy Gunn. I think everything with Swerve and Keith Lee has been really, really good in AEW. So that yeah. I think that's kind of an underrated signing. And Regal signing here, and then a few months later, Vince McMahon being out of power in WWE, and Triple H having the reins there makes for an interesting dynamic, because, you know, going back to their WCW tag team in 1994, Regal and Triple H have always been tight, and would have thought that in a Triple H regime that Regal would have had a major role, and now he's in the other company. So that's interesting.
Yeah, timing is everything, right? Timing is everything. I think to your point, I think the Swerve and Keith Lee team is, I think it's really elevated them both. I think if they do this right, it's a feud between them is going to elevate things. Obviously, that would be months and months and months ahead. But yeah, I think that both those signings, Keith Lee actually happened in February, and then obviously the Swerve official one. I think we're going to look back in this in March for Revolution for 2023, and I think it's going to be some good stuff. I think both those are going to be pretty solid signings along the way. Let's talk about some other stuff that happened during the month. We'll go over this in two chunks as a few things here, because there are some more signings. So we had Blake Christian making his AEW debut in Dark. Keith Lee talked about the Bearcat gimmick, that he was the name he was given from Vince McMahon, and talked about not liking it. So he was able to kind of talk freely about that. Eric Redbeard made his AEW debut working a trios match. I believe that was the night before Revolution, if I remember right. 2.0 got their brand new names, Daddy Magic and Angela Parker. FTR announced they were going to be taking a select number of indie bookings. Miro reportedly signed a 4-year AEW contract extension, which is hilarious because I was talking to this other podcast I do and for Limitless Wrestling, an indie promotion. And one of the guys that regularly appears in Limitless has been doing a lot of AEW Dark stuff lately, and a guy named Channing Thomas. And I think I mentioned, I said, Channing, as he's worked as many AEW matches this year as Miro has. And that's insane. Like, it's crazy. Like, he's just like gone. And I asked pretty about this at the press conference. I get a very vague answer and just was not, you know, any insight, but it's, I forgot that. Yeah. He probably signed a 4-year extension. So who knows? Chris Jericho, after Revolution, forming the Jericho Appreciation Society, that of course led to 2.0 getting their new names. Jeff Hardy officially signed his contract with AEW and appeared on Dynamite. He and Matt appeared a few months or the week after in tag team action for the first time. They had the whole Hardy music. Everything was good there. He talked afterwards about, you know, walking out of that WWE match in Texas was subconsciously one of the smartest things I've ever done, which riled up the WWE bots on Twitter. I remember that. Matt Hardy signed an AEW contract extension. Thunder Rosa won the AEW women's title in a steel cage match at the St. Patrick's Day Slam, again, coming a year after that really tremendous lights out match that they had, Thunder Rosa defeating her rival. I think that they had the match happen at Revolution. I thought it should have happened there, but they really kind of squeezed their way into doing it in San Antonio just because that's where the event was. I don't know. I think it just kind of strike when the iron's hot. And I think they've kind of learned from that based on what they did at Revolution this weekend. But we'll talk about that in a second. Scorpio Sky, remember him winning the TNT title on Dynamite. Paige VanZant, remember her signing an AEW contract on Dynamite. And WWE wanted to, she revealed later that WWE supposedly wanted to sign her to an exclusive deal. Sting came clean with his battles with alcohol and opioid addiction in the past. William Regal apologized for his time issues, what he called them, with his first AEW promo. If you remember, it really ran long. It was kind of rambling a bit. He talked about his health status. There was somebody apparently kind of leaked to Dave some of the stuff that he had talked about on the Jericho podcast, I think a little bit early, and kind of got, I think, misconstrued that you know, William Regal was near death and all this stuff. And then he revealed in the podcast that he kind of was near death. There was very close near death experiences and all that. So yeah, it wasn't good, but he said he's been healthier now that he's been in years. And Joey Janela said he was not interested in re-signing with AEW. And I remember he talked to Denise Salcedo about that and was kind of very open about, you know, not being happy. And that was one of the, you know, hear a lot about disgruntled talent, at least at this point of the year. We would a lot more throughout the course of the year, but that was kind of one of the first early signees that was really showing their displeasure about not being used and how they were being used and all that. Thoughts about any of that stuff? What sticks out to you?
Blake Christian's kind of a guy who's had some buzz for quite some time and has still, months later, yet to really make his impact on the national or international stage. So I think that kind of, we thought at the time maybe that would be a bigger deal, Blake Christian appearing on Dark, and just kind of a non-factor. Jeff Hardy continued to do Jeff Hardy things all year.
Yep.
You know, I have a grudging respect for Matt and Jeff, and I'm a big fan of a lot of things that they've done and was a huge fan of Jeff, you know, back in the day. But probably best that Jeff not be in the wrestling business at this stage. I do remember, as you talked about the Thunder Rosa beating Britt Baker for the title, they did it in her hometown on the 1 year anniversary of their lights out match from the previous St. Patrick's Day Slam. But kind of felt a little bit late there. Like they kind of missed the timing. Looking back, in it will seem very poetic that they had both of these matches on the St. Patrick's Day show, both of these memorable matches on St. Patrick's Day shows, and people probably won't remember, but they kind of botched the timing a little bit here. Paige VanZant should have been a bigger deal. Although I don't necessarily blame AEW for that. If the person doesn't want to put in the work and has significant sources of income from whether it be bare knuckle fighting or her OnlyFans or whatever the case may be, I wouldn't want to take bumps. And Joey Janela kind of getting out in front of, you know, I'm not interested in re-signing with AEW. Yeah, I'm not sure they were. I'm not sure you would have been asked back, Joey. But I don't want heat with Joey. I met Joey once in real life, and he was exactly what you would think Joey Janela was. It was very. This was months before he Enzo Amore got into a fight at a Blink 182 concert. And Joey Janela was, we were at a convention, and I don't know if he and Penelope were still together at the time, or if as a couple, or just as an act, but they were standing there, and Enzo Amore walks into this convention, he's making all this noise and stuff, and Joey Janela goes, "Who in the fuck would wait in line to get Enzo Amore's autograph?" So... I wasn't surprised, like, you know, 6 or 8 months later when it came out that they got into a fight at a Blink 182 concert. But Joey Janela kind of, I appreciate him trying to kind of control his narrative here, saying, yeah, I'm not interested in re-signing with AEW. Okay, yeah, you may not have been asked back, bud.
True. We'll go to the second chunk here. AEW's Kenny Omega recovering from knee surgery, sports hernia surgery, was set for March. Again, no real timetable for his return. A lot of people were hoping that based on a timeline that, you know, maybe May might be an option for Double or Nothing, but that would not happen as well. CM Punk was set for season 2 of Starz Heels show. Matt Sydal suffered a dislocated knee injury. AEW announced a working relationship with DDT that we start to see a few benefits from. We'll talk about that in a minute. Again, Blake Christian's official AEW debut is part of the Dark lineup. Jake Atlas was still under a contract at the time, quote unquote, doing pretty good following February ACL surgery. Ethan Page's AEW contract was reportedly extended in late 2021. Tony Storm signed with AEW, qualified for the Owen Hart Foundation Women's Tournament. Tony Khan was talking with Impact about essentially what to do with Ring of Honor Women's Champion Deonna Purrazzo after he had bought the company. AEW's trademark filings may have revealed the name of their upcoming console video game in a rebranded faction as well, that being the Undisputed Elite. And then also the Fight Forever game. So some trademark filings revealed some things there. Konsei Takeshita announced his return to AEW after April. Marco Stunt was another one of numerous AEW contracts reportedly that were set to come up in May, and his deal would eventually not be renewed. And then MJF and Tony Khan sell their issues over a non-cleared interview that MJF did with Ariel Helwani. So everything was good there. Thoughts on any of that?
The things that the stand after me here, Jake Atlas, boy, that was a roller coaster year for Jake.
Yeah,
he tore his ACL in his first TV match with AEW. That had to suck. And then he had some personal problems later in the year. Hopefully he gets his life sorted. That would be nice. Ethan Page, a guy that they needed to bring in. I feel like they needed a name for like a Face of the Revolution or one of those kinds of ladder matches at one point. And he was a name and they brought him in, but I'm not really feeling the Ethan Page push here now in year two. So, I mean, good for him. You know, no problems with the guy, but not a big Ethan Page guy.
Yeah.
Tony Storm signing. I'm a massive Tony Storm fan. He's one of my all-time favorites. I was supposed to see her wrestle live for the first time last December, and she quit WWE and flew herself home.
I remember that.
Yes. She was going to be in a three-way with Sasha Banks, my favorite wrestler, and Charlotte Flair at a WWE house show, and she quit the day of herself home.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see her pop up here. And then I did get to see her live later in the year. So just glad that and she got a lot of TV time this year, and I think did really well with it. And so happy that things worked out for Toni Storm. Hope things work out for Jake Atlas. And Konosuke Takeshita turned out to be very popular with the AEW audience, and I think is going to be a big star here going forward. So kind of notable that he was kind of in and out over the course of the year, but he made an impact with the time that he had.
All right, let me paint a scenario for you that I'm sure has happened before. You're on your laptop, you want to watch a soccer game, you want to watch a baseball game, you want to watch this. And you get that annoying pop-up that says it is region-specific and you can't watch it. Isn't that the worst? I've dealt with this before, and I found a solution years ago, and I'm going to give this solution to you right now. NordVPN. That's right. You've heard about VPN services before. Nord is one I have personally used since 2020, and we're now in partnership with them, and I have a great discount for my listeners. If you ever thought about using a service like this, this is the right time to do it. NordVPN.com/F4W. NordVPN.com/F4W. Get a huge discount off your VPN plan, plus 4 months for free, completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to love it. Again, if you've ever thought about a VPN service, right now is the time to do it. Limited time offer. NordVPN.com/F4W. Huge discount, great security. You don't have to worry about where you are, and it's awesome. Check them out. Let's flip to WWE. Big month for the Fed as they were getting ready for WrestleMania. But probably the biggest news of the month was very sad news. Big E suffering a broken neck during a SmackDown match and an overhead suplex to the outside, on the outside of the ring by Ridge Holland. Broke his neck. He narrowly avoided a stroke, paralysis, or death with the injury. Got very lucky there. And he's on his road to recovery. We don't know at this point when that will be, if he'll actually be in the ring. He's living a good life, which is good. They have him as a big part of the NL program. He's doing appearances and seems pretty upbeat. Really, it's just a question, and they won't know this probably till early next year if everything is healed up enough for him to do this again. So I think we're still a ways away as we talk today. But if he never wrestles again, at least he is not in a wheelchair things could have been a lot worse. And, I think we take a lot of this stuff for granted because we see big bumps, big everything all the time. And this is a move that happens all the time. It's just, he fell wrong and that was it. And his body was just kind of like, all right, this is, just a freak accident in a lot of ways. He's at least going to be able to live a life again. It's just a question of where he's going to be living a wrestling life again, and we won't be able to see it. But this happened. It was kind of one of those things that obviously is an outpouring of support for him, very beloved by everyone. He just seemed to kind of be getting into that. He'd won the world title, but really had seemed to be kind of getting in that upper echelon, kind of floating around there. Maybe this is going to be the year to do it. And, unfortunate things happen. And, that was a big story and one that could have had a lot worse ending.
Yeah. As you mentioned, one of those universally loved guys, and the response to that was really nice, really nice to see. And it's good that, whether or not he gets back in the ring again, he is, as you said, living a normal life. And, he had been a single on Raw after being world champion, and then all of a sudden he just kind of moved back to SmackDown and slid back into the New Day team,
right?
With one of those start stop Vince McMahon push, or we blame you for not getting yourself over as champion kind of things. I'm not sure, but whatever the best outcome is here, we hope that that happens for Big E. Yeah, one of those freak things. It. Remember watching SmackDown that night. You've seen worse. Like you've seen worse bumps.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
It was just it was one of those things.
So we go to other news, obviously with Triple H speaking out for the very first time since his late 2021 heart issues, cardiac incident. So he now officially announced his in-ring retirement. He did that in an interview saying that he was done. He talked about, this was with Ariel as well. He talked to his, about his near-death experience. Actually, no, this might've been with Stephen A. Smith. I may be conflating the interviews, but he talked, may have been Stephen A. Smith. He talked about his near-death experience, having a genetic heart issue. That was, again, some of his other family members had had for, I believe. Talked about the seriousness about he basically almost died based on the amount of blood that was going through his heart and pumping. Eventually, he would be announced he'd be back. He said he was back in a WWE executive role. We didn't really know kind of what that was. He just told some NXT personnel he was back, I guess, and that he had to step back a little bit while he was still recovering. So, he was kind of in the – at this point, he had probably had no idea what was coming, obviously. But this is kind of the first on-ramp to getting back to his previous life of doing things. But there was no ambiguity with his announcement that he was going to be done. Basically, that with his the heart issues, and he wasn't going to risk that. And I mean, at that point, there was nothing else for him to accomplish in the ring other than just occasional nostalgia matches or something like that. At this point, he's kind of done it all. So I was glad he retired, and there was no kind of like, we'll see. I think he's smart enough to know that he has a ton of money in the bank. He has at this point, he knew at some point he was probably going to take over something. I don't think he knew it was going to be as quick as it was, but he has, again, a pretty good life, and there was no reason for him to risk that. But it was good to kind of hear him start to reveal some of these things and, kind of set up what would be a very unusual and big year for him months and months down the road.
He was very point blank about the fact that he's retired. As you said, he's like, hey, I got a pacemaker. I'm done. So, yeah. Unlike Ric Flair, who would wrestle later in the year. Just part of the roller coaster year for Triple H. But he very kind of, I remember that Stephen A. Smith interview where he talked about this stuff, and it's very Triple H and Stephanie seem like almost like androids sometimes, and it was almost almost odd to see him have like a twinge of human emotion as he talked about the thought crossed his mind as he was being put under for surgery that he might not see his kids again. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he actually shed a tear or was trying to shed
did.
A tear.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I could. Yeah, the android response. Yeah. You're right. He was showing human emotion. And because I think we're so used to seeing, Vince talking, it's a different type of emotion. But yeah, and Stephanie is very marketing speak, but he actually seemed like genuine. I don't think we're used to seeing that.
Yeah. Nice to see someone, an executive there, not doing the corporate speak.
Exactly. Do you have a favorite Triple H match?
Off the top of my head, I really liked his in-ring period from about 02 to 05 there. Best Triple H, favorite Triple H match, probably the Hell in a Cell with Foley at No Way Out. I guess it was kind of the closer of their, they either did two or three kind of big singles matches there that made Triple H kind of a singles star. They did a Street Fighter at Royal Rumble, and then they did a Hell in a Cell at No Way Out in February that year. So I would probably say Triple H and Foley, Hell in a Cell. How about you?
Yeah. The one I remember the most, I think the Foley one's a good call. The one I remember the most is the one that he should have stayed defeated when Jericho beat him at the start of Raw.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. for the title. And then at the end of the show, they reversed it. Yeah. I thought that was it was just such a great moment. And then they just like reverse course. And it was such just a air out of the balloon type thing, and not in a I can't wait to see Jericho get revenge. It was just kind of just like, oh God, like, you know, it's that was the one I remember the most. But he's he was always kind of one of those guys in ring that you could just tell there was Austin, Rock, and Triple H, but he was never on that level. He could go with those guys, but in terms of fans really caring and seeing him on that level, he was a good third, but he was never one of those top two. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That Jericho match, State College, Pennsylvania. I don't know why I know that.
That's right. Yeah.
At Penn State there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll go over this this first chunk here, and then we'll go through all the Mania announcements. So, first of all, Finn Balor won the U.S. Championship on Edition of Raw, and it was revealed later he missed the Royal Rumble this year due to a work visa renewal. So it was kind of weird that he wasn't on the show, but that was the reason why. So Mania 38 taking shape. We talked a little bit about some of this, some of the big stuff last month, but this is kind of the rest of the card. AJ Styles accepting Edge's challenge. WWE announced they were going to be holding a WrestleMania Week talent tryout for college athletes. Vince McMahon himself was going to induct The Undertaker into the Hall of Fame. Pat McAfee accepted an offer to wrestle, taking on Austin Theory. That came via this this interview that McMahon did on Pat McAfee's show. And there was thoughts that it was initially going to be McMahon straight up against McAfee. That'll be something we'll talk about next month. There was question about Austin and Owens, whether basically we knew there were some plans, but we didn't know if it was going to be a match, a confrontation, kind of what was going to happen. But regardless, Owens finally called him out. Austin accepted, and essentially we were going to be on for something at Mania. We just didn't know what. There was some question about Cody Rhodes' WWE status that he might not sign, and I don't know how much of that ended up being real. They were hoping that he would appear for WrestleMania 38. The deal was still not done. And then later on in the month, it was announced that Seth Rollins would be facing an opponent of Vince McMahon's choosing at WrestleMania, and there was talk that essentially it was going to be Rhodes and Rollins. And so I think there was this part of fandom of the AEW real hardcores that didn't want Cody to leave, that there was a silver lining, or there was a ray of hope, rather, that he was going to go back. Something happened in negotiations. He was going to go back to AEW, but that was not to be. Vader, Steiners, Charmel all announced for being inducted into the Hall of Fame. WWE is discussing a change to the Hall of Fame induction format to make it less long, I guess you could say. Dude Perfect was announced to reveal the WrestleMania 38 set as corporate synergy continues. Anything Goes stipulation was announced for Sami Zayn versus Giant Knoxville. Shad Gaspard was announced to posthumously receive the WWE Warrior Award, and that WrestleMania 38 Night 1 pre-show was going to be airing on the USA Network. A lot there, but thoughts about any of that stuff? Obviously, we'd see what would be to come in April, but kind of the build to Mania. Any thoughts on that?
AJ Styles and Edge, remember the build to that? The build to that was pretty good, but I remember that's like a 2007 dream match that we were getting in 2022.
Yeah,
I think I like Edge and Beth Phoenix as people. I am not going to remember Edge's comeback fondly. I never saw a bad Edge match before he retired. And then since he's come back, maybe there's been one good Edge match. So yeah. I can appreciate him wanting to write his own end to his own story. But anyway, what else do we have here? I still don't know about I have a lot of questions about Cody Rhodes and how all of that happened. He had the 3-year AEW contract initially, and then AEW reportedly had 2-year options on most of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So did Tony Khan say, look, man, I'm not picking up your 2-year option? Did Cody say, please don't pick up my 2-year option, I want to renegotiate? Why was that 2-year option not picked up? Who was that? Who was that on?
Right.
Will we ever get an answer about that? Because I'm sure NDAs were signed, those kinds of things. I have no idea who Dude Perfect is. The Sami Zayn, Johnny Knoxville smoke and mirrors. That's like the greatest WWE smoke and mirrors match in history. I think pro wrestling as an art form peaked that night with Zane in Knoxville. So I think the anything goes stipulation really added to that. And that's what I got on that.
So I thought of this earlier, and this may be a notion that I've seen elsewhere. I think it might be, but if you compare I thought about this actually Saturday in Newark. You compare the Edge return to Sting's run in AEW. I think if you were to ask Edge and say this isn't going to go out to any news outlet, just what are you thinking straight up? I think he'd be like, I wish I had done that instead. Not necessarily go to AEW, but I think if you look at the way the both runs went in terms of what's going to be most memorable, most people are talking about the Sting stuff because he's not in every – he's not wrestling as frequently as Edge is, and the stuff he's doing – people are still just kind of like, wow, because he's, you know, 60 some odd years old and he's still flying and doing stuff, and he's, it fits, and they use him the right way. And granted, there was definitely a run where, you know, he was on like every single week, and it was kind of like, it was just kind of killing it a little bit, you know, the whole Sting Speaks thing. I remember that.
Yeah.
But I think if you just look kind of the whole presentation when it's all said and done, I think my guess is he would say, I like how that went better than how this win. That'd be my guess.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. And I don't know this. I don't know the guy, but Edge strikes me as someone who maybe did not watch a ton of wrestling while he was not in wrestling, and the in-ring just kind of passed him by. And mm-hmm. so he's wrestling a style that was very commonplace 15 years ago. And I don't know if that's, I think the pace has quickened in the last decade and a half while he was away. So that's not necessarily his fault, but yeah, I think you're spot on there with the Sting comparison.
Yeah. All right, we'll go through this first chunk here, or this next chunk, rather. The report that Cody Rhodes had officially signed with WWE, that got out there, so we just talked about that a second ago. WWE and A&E announced an expanding programming partnership and new series to debut, so basically more documentaries, more... basically, you know, WWE is a content machine trying to get to all these different things. So it's going to continue in earnest, especially with A&E. There was a report that WWE released a manager of global talent strategy and development. I include that because there was a lot of front office changes throughout the course of the year as the Nick Khan era really kind of took hold. Obviously, there would be some changes when it came to that whole regime. WWE terminated their partnership with a Russian broadcaster and shut down the network in Russia after the Ukraine issues, the start of the Ukraine issues, rather. Hell in a Cell announced for June. Ricochet won the Intercontinental title on SmackDown. RK-Bro won the tag team titles on Raw, setting up a pretty fun run for them. Roman Reigns attacked Brock Lesnar at a MSG house show to kind of set up their, or a the one of the setups for their Mania match. They kind of made this into like a big deal that Lesnar is going to be on the show, and I think he was against Austin Theory, which a lot of people were not thrilled about. I remember at the time fans were kind of that went to that were kind of upset, but then Reigns bloodied him up. They showed it on TV and all that stuff. So that was good. WWE reporting discussing future video game options with EA Sports, which piqued people's interest because the video game people are very into that. Shout out to BR. Becky Lynch had to miss a few episodes of Raw due to a fractured voice box, which sounds completely painful. Braun Breaker made his debut on WWE Raw and teamed with Tommaso Ciampa. So a semblance of the future there. Sasha Banks and Xavier Woods were nominated for Nickelodeon's Kids' Choice Awards. I know you probably voted for Sasha a few times in those awards. WWE is returning to Europe for a house show tour, and then Ronda Rousey is going to be part of two events there. Evil docuseries is coming to Peacock later in the month. Pete Dunne was renamed Butch in his SmackDown debut, which a lot of people did not like. Vince McMahon got a raise. That was great for him. Nick Khan getting a almost $8 million equity increase. Again, I throw that in there just for what was to come. Becky Lynch and Xavier Woods, after their injuries, return to the ring in a house show. WWE getting into the NFT game, which is really dumb. They partner with a group to expand their Next in Line program, which is going to be a big part of their future, already is. They filed a motion to dismiss the MLW lawsuit that was unsuccessful. And then Gable Stevenson won his second consecutive NCAA wrestling title. It's announced he's going to be appearing at WrestleMania 38. And at the time, Dave was told he was going to be a Raw regular very, very soon. And as we sit here on Tuesday, November 22nd, that hasn't happened yet. Thoughts on any of that?
Becky missing Raw with a fractured voice box. That was from she got hurt at a house show match, I think, against Bianca Belair. I saw one of those house show matches. They were tearing the house down every night at house shows. So
tearing the freaking house down.
They were tearing the freaking house down every night. They have great chemistry. They had great matches. Just kind of one of those unfortunate things. Braun Breaker appearing on Raw. I see Braun Breaker maybe just because he's Rick Steiner's son, but I see him as the spiritual successor of the Steiners, in that there's someone that Bruce Pritchard would have tried to sell Vince McMahon on, and Vince McMahon would not have gotten it. Like, Vince McMahon never knew what to do with the Steiners. I don't think Vince McMahon would know what to do with Braun Breaker. His gimmick is kind of, he's a shooter. Like, it's not the gimmick, but it is the gimmick. He wears an amateur wrestling singlet, and he just kind of talks tough, and he goes out there and does a bunch of throws and suplexes. And it's like, I don't think he would have been Vince McMahon's cup of tea, but I think this is maybe Bruce saying, hey, let's get Braun on Raw and have you take a look at him. And, he's still in NXT, so I don't know about that. But, and Gable Steveson, still waiting. He's apparently training full time at the PC now. I guess he had some health issues that we didn't know about.
Yeah.
We're still waiting.
Go over this final chunk here for WWE stuff for May. The Undertaker felt that the current WWE product lacked a quote-unquote level of grit, which got people pretty pissed off. Veer Mahan finally going to debut on an April 4th WWE edition of Raw. Stephanie McMahon, Joe, the Faze Clan Board of Directors. I don't know why I put this in there because I don't know what that is. Middle East and North Africa broadcast deals were announced. They announced a comprehensive long-term deal with Fanatics, with basically moving all of WWE shop of stuff over there. Fanatics is obviously huge in basically every sports space, so that was a big thing for them. They announced a 25-episode Book of Wrestling podcast series with The Ringer. I have not heard any of those. Return to Saudi Arabia was announced for September. Showrunners were announced for the United States of America versus Vince McMahon drama series, which I still don't know kind of where that sits right now. Seth Rollins, in an interview, said that AEW referencing WWE on TV, quote-unquote, reeks of desperation. John Cena said that touring with WWE full-time now would hit that point of diminishing returns for him. I would agree on that. Nick Khan said that everybody has the same opportunity to turn their way to the top in WWE, and that did not sit well with a lot of people. Vince McMahon and WWE were announced as producing a scripted series for NBC Universal called Pinned. I have no idea where that sits right now. Paul Heyman says that he signed a long-term deal with WWE in 2021. And Shane McMahon, here comes the money, reportedly going to be brought in for WrestleMania weekend, despite the fact that he was let go from his creative role or whatever role he had backstage after the disastrous Royal Rumble, which we talked about last month. A lot of things there. Thoughts on any of that?
Shane getting fired for screwing up the Royal Rumble is one of my favorite stories in the history of WWE. And Vince responding to it by saying he will never get another pop as long as I run this company. Like, that's punishing his son by not letting him get a pop. That's tremendous stuff.
That's so great.
As someone that has purchased WWE merchandise from in the before times when they had WWE shop, as opposed to someone who buys Major League Baseball and NFL merchandise from Fanatics, I can understand why WWE would want to do the deal with Fanatics, and I'm sure that kind of outsourcing that makes a lot of sense for them. Fanatics shipping sucks so bad.
Yeah.
I hate buying merch from Fanatics. So I haven't bought any WWE merch in a long time, but that I'm not a fan of that Fanatics deal. And all these the scripted dramas for Peacock, but I don't remember any of that. I think that anything involving Vince McMahon, I guess the Netflix thing is still happening.
Supposedly. Yep.
Yeah, that's weird. But everything else, yeah, I guess that maybe that stuff will remain in development forever. I don't know.
Let's flip to NXT. So we'll go through these kind of a Yeah, normal month for them. Samoa Joe revealed that he had COVID-19 when he did that vacation of the NXT title. Kind of the weird thing. He did the videos like on a Sunday night, and that he was told the WWE wanted to go in a different direction when they released him for the second time in about, what, 6 months or whatever it was. Amari Miller was stretchered out following a match on NXT. Rob Conway, an old OVW name, reportedly worked as producer at NXT taping. Roderick Strong appeared for NXT UK. A Kid made his debut in NXT. Dolph Ziggler won the NXT title in a three-way over Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa at Roadblock. Roxy reportedly did sign her WWE contract and was set to start in NXT. Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray won the Women's Dusty Road Tag Team Classic. Quincy Elliott made his debut on Level Up. And then Randy Orton said that WWE NXT wrestlers aren't being taught to protect their opponents. That got some good buzz as well. So thoughts on any of NXT's big month?
Orton complaining about NXT wrestlers not being taught to protect their opponents, I think, came from working a tag match with the Street Profits where Montez Ford came off the top rope and hit a frog splash and landed directly on Randy Orton's head. Like, I don't know how you miss a frog splash and hit a guy in the head, but that appeared to be what happened.
Yeah.
So I can understand his frustration. I think that's a broad generalization, saying that guys aren't being taught to protect their opponents. I'm sure. Well, we could talk about institutional problems with NXT training or that approach, but I think maybe that's a little bit overstating it a little bit. Dolph Ziggler winning the NXT title. The quality of NXT television went like right in the toilet as soon as Dolph Ziggler showed up, and it immediately became perfectly fine and watchable again as soon as Dolph Ziggler left. So I don't think that anything that he was expressly involved in there was bad. But the show immediately improved when he left. So not a big Dolph Ziggler guy. And Roderick Strong appearing in NXT UK. I think Roderick Strong, I don't think it's a secret that he has wanted to get out of WWE for some time, at least in this time period. He was kind of looking to get out and get a release. And they were like, we're not going to release you. And they're also like, well, we don't really want to use you in the ring because we're afraid you're going to get hurt and then your contract will be extended and we'll have to pay you not to wrestle. So we're just going to pay you to like do awkward promos with the Diamond Mind on NXT television, and we'll send you over to NXT UK for one set of tapings and you'll wrestle once in like a 3 month stretch. Very strange year for Roderick Strong. He's still kind of in purgatory. So I guess we'll see what happens with that.
That's right. Flip to Ring of Honor. Again, we talked a lot about this with Tony Conneray, but these are some of the things that also got announced. They added talent to the Supercard of Honor taping, I'll get to in a second, and set a Philly TV taping date. That would never happen. This was before the sale. Kerry Silken announced he was going to receive his first ever Ring of Honor Hall of Fame Legacy Award. Matches that were announced for Supercard of Honors. This was after Tony Khan took over. The Briscoes versus FTR, Jay Lethal versus Lee Moriarty, Josh Woods versus Wheeler Yuta for the Pure title. Tully Blanchard said he was going to debut a new client on the show. Rhett Titus versus Minoru Suzuki. Ring of Honor TV title match. That was kind of a weird one. It was first announced. That would make more sense later on. And then Mercedes Martinez and Will Nightingale in an interim women's title match. And Jay Briscoe apologized again for the homophobic tweets that he did in 2013. Again, AEW trying to find some way to get the Briscoes on AEW TV, but unsuccessful thus far. So it's kind of part of that apology campaign, nothing doing. But Supercard of Honor was taking shape and in a very, very interesting month for the Ring of Honor brand being sold and then kind of setting up for what no one really was kind of sure what was going to come for Supercard of Honor the next month.
Yeah, that would turn out to be the kind of a mix of the end of the old regime and the beginning of the new regime as a card, and as far as who would be there working for or who would still be there going forward. But when it comes to Jay Briscoe apologizing for some of homophobic tweets from almost 10 years ago now, it's one of those things where you almost feel for the guy. I almost feel for the guy, but it's like, there are consequences to actions, and it's like, what, but what, I'm uncomfortable with just canceling someone forever based on an ignorant opinion that they had or that they tweeted a long time ago. But also I understand that there are consequences to actions. So I'm not sure when, if ever, will the Briscoes have done their penance for this? I guess the answer is never, because the Warner Media people didn't want the Briscoes signed or on television. So they're still paying for that. I'm not sure it's entirely fair. I'm not sure it's not entirely fair.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. Weird situation. Let's go to Impact, our favorite promotion here, Thursday Night Boys. D'Lo Brown was announced as not returning to Impact, the Impact Wrestling commentary team. Impact Sacrifice, Tasha Steelz won the Knockouts title, Joe Doering and Eric Young winning the tag team titles, The Influence winning the Knockouts tag team titles, and in a main event that actually happened, Impact World Champion defended his title against Heath in the main event. Yes, Heath Slater, everyone, in the main event of an Impact Wrestling TV show. Multiverse of matches taking shape for April during a WrestleCon weekend. Jay White against Chris Sabin. Tomohiro Ishii making his Impact debut against Eddie Edwards. And then the Briscoes, we just talked about them, taking on the Good Brothers. I believe that was it for the very first time. Michael Elgin, remember him, filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against Impact Wrestling. Good luck with that. Josh Alexander, after a re-signed with the company and got a world title match for April. That was after his work visa had expired and his contract had expired. They weren't sure when he was going to be able to come back. Wrote him out in storyline just for temporarily, and he re-signed and got everything squared away. Jake Something announced his departure. Christy Hemme learned she was working backstage. Eddie Edwards signed a new deal. Fala Ba was done with Impact Wrestling. Heath, his Impact Wrestling contract was extended into 2023. Due to an injury that he had in 2021. Ishii and Jonah and Jonathan Gresham versus Eddie Edwards were set for Impact Rebellion. That would be April's pay-per-view. And then Impact announced Under Siege coming for May. Thoughts on any of that? And if you don't have any, that's fine too.
Impact is a strange melting pot of talent that can't or won't work anywhere else. That's kind of my opinion of a lot of Impact Wrestling. There's some good stuff there, but also Heath was a pay-per-view main eventer. So yeah. Nothing against him, but like, you know, WWE's mid-card from a decade ago, main eventing pay-per-views, not going to be the top of the list of things that I feel the need to watch.
Yeah, but they still, it's crazy, man. Like, they got, here I am defending Impact. I'm always with this group. They got all these New Japan, the top guys like Jay White, Ishii. I mean, the Briscoes against Good. They managed just, the melting pot thing is a good analogy, man. Like, they really just, like, have all these people that come in. They put together these shows that if you kind of take a step back, you're like, it's not that bad, you know? It's like, it's not, yeah, you know, upper level, but it's just, I think they're kind of just caught in this thing where there's so much good wrestling. We see a lot of these people elsewhere that it is kind of what it is. I think it's just they're caught in the too much wrestling glut. But, I mean, you look at, like, again, the NWA or something like that. It's like the eons better than them in terms of talent and people, you know, with a lot of their special matches, their monthly special matches and all stuff. And you hear about them and people are like, ah, this is really good. And it's not just from Impact super fans. It's everyone else. So yeah, it's weird. I don't know what they do to kind of get more attention, but they're trying. I mean, you get some of these top Japan guys and top they're trying. I just don't know. I just don't know what it's going to take to kind of get over the hump.
This must be profitable. Yes. I mean, the fact that it's still happening.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, Access bought them, right? I mean, Access bought the whole company, or Anthem bought Access just to get Impact or some amalgamation right. of that, right?
Right. Anthem bought the television network so they would have somewhere to air the wrestling.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And it's a far cry from the outdoor channel, whatever. What the hell channel were they on?
Was it they were on Destination America Outdoor Life channel?
Yes, Outdoor Life. Sound right? Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, it's a lot better than those days, but it's yeah, it's weird. It's a weird promotion. We'll flip to Japan, and I'll defer to you after I get through this because you are well more versed in this than I ever will be. Jay White versus Speedball Mike Bailey announced for New Japan Lone Star Shootout. Strong was announced as returning to Philadelphia in May. Killian Dane making his debut at Strong Style Evolved. Killer Cross set for his Strong debut, challenging Minoru Suzuki. Again, Minoru Suzuki basically working against every single person possible on every single show in 2022. Sonata was out of action with a fractured orbital bone. John Moxley versus Will Ospreay was set for Windy City Riot. New Japan revealed their dates for the Best of the Super Juniors 29. Kairi returning to action. Kairi Sane, of course. Returning at Stardom's World Climax, the Best, and then suffered a ruptured eardrum, I believe it's the next night at World Climax, the Top. She has since recovered from that and had a pretty good year. Zack Sabre Jr. won the New Japan Cup, and promotion announcer making their Washington, D.C. debut with Capital Collision. Thoughts on any of that?
So a lot of strong stuff there that turned out to be not a whole lot of anything. I did go to that Capital Collision event. That was a nice show. It was a nice show. They had a four-way with like Juice Robinson, John Moxley, Will Ospreay, and Tanahashi in the main event. That was really good. New Japan, not quite in the Killian Dane. A lot of the talent that they use for Strong, it's kind of in the similar to what we just talked about with Impact, in that, you know, Killian Dane is a fine wrestler. But he doesn't stand out in any way, shape, or form in 2022 when there's so much content that you have to get through from the major promotions to even get to see one of his matches. So that, you know, kind of sucks for the New Japan Strong guys. But I assume this is profitable because they still run these tapings once a month.
Yeah.
You know, they're in Los Angeles like six times a year, and then kind of around the country for the other 6 months of these television tapings, and they do the big shows here and there. But Speedball Mike Bailey had a big year, being able to work in the United States again, and popped up on most indies, and Killer Cross debuting and losing to Minoru Suzuki. Killer Cross, a roller coaster year for him, but he's back. He's back in WWE now. So yep. I guess it all worked out.
We'll go over to the junk drawer to round things up. And this was a big month because Scott Hall passed away, 63 years old. After being on life support, he suffered heart attacks when he was due to complications, having broken hip surgery. And, you know, I think all of us kind of knew deep down that this was inevitable, given the well-documented health history he's had, alcohol abuse, and so on. And he just had a really, really tough life. Not even mentioning the fact that, you know, he worked in an era where rings weren't exactly the best, you know, working on cement type stuff, and just the amount of damage that does to a body and so on. Anything he did, he was a pretty jacked up guy as well. So call that what you will. But, you know, passing away at just 63 years old, and the outpour, I think the thing I was struck with the most was after he died, just the outpouring of, like, there was like nobody had a negative thing to say about him. Like, all these different people from all these walks of life in wrestling were just glowing, and not, you know, the whole phrase, you know, don't speak ill of the dead. This just felt different. It felt like genuine, where people were just, they couldn't say enough good things about him. And obviously, you know, crossed over pop culture wise, cause so many people remembered him from the, you know, the Attitude Era. He was such a big part of the WCW, that whole thing with the Outsiders and the invasion type angle and all that stuff. But it was just, in a business where so many people come through and don't make a dent or they're barely memorable, he really stood out, even though he was never like the guy, but he was, you know, the bad guy. Right. I mean, he was yeah. he was a major player, and, you know, again, he never won the big one, but he didn't have to. And I suppose that's pretty good.
Yeah, as you meant, he fun-loving guy. That's the kind of the yeah. But kind of key though that, as you mentioned, that no one had a bad word to say about the guy. Yeah, whatever his personal foibles and failings were, and I think people, he was maybe a little bit more of a straight shooter in terms of how he handled himself politically than maybe some of the other top guys of that era, like Hogan or Nash, who might have a little more heat because of it. I think people were, I think he's a little bit more of a straight shooter, and he was well loved by everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, he, it's crazy stuff. Yeah, crazy. And yeah. I think the thing when you hear so many wrestlers talk about how he would give them advice, you know, advice on matches, and they would ask him. And this was, you know, it wasn't just top guys, it was working indie shows when after he was kind of cleaned up a little bit. It was kind of cool to see, and obviously a pretty sad story. And, but, you know, that is this business. It's crazy. Speaking of crazy, Jeff Jarrett's 2022 rolled on with a stop in the NWA at the Crockett Cup. He was the ambassador and also referee the main event between Matt Cardona and Nick Aldis for the NWA title. It was a bad DQ ending. Remember our Josiah McDonald just burying that. Bad DQ ending. Cardona won to a perceived low blow by Mickey James. They tried to explain it and it was awful, but yeah. And then the Briscoes, talk about them again, won the Crockett Cup tournament as well, so they always have a home there. Minoru Suzuki again working against everyone, taking on Effie for the very first time at Joey Janela's Spring Break 6. I remember seeing that. I think I may have actually written that story. That was one of those things you see that and you're like, what is going on? But it just absolutely fit perfectly. EC3's Control Your Narrative announced a deal with Pro Wrestling TV. That was their big TV deal. MLW announcing they were going to start a women's featherweight championship. Azteca Underground was finally taking shape. Maven was announced for Spring Break 6, former WWE Tough Enough contender and participant. GCW announced UK tour dates with TNT Extreme Wrestling. Battle Riot 4 was announced for MLW's return to New York. Suzuki versus Too Cold Scorpio was booked for GCW, the old me again, just working anybody you can. Your favorite, the Good Brothers and Rocky Romero launched the Gimmicks cartoon series. NFTs available, of course. I don't know how many of those you bought, but I'm sure there's a lot there. NBA free agent Enes Kanter-Freedom said he has an offer to begin his pro wrestling career. As we sit here again in November, nothing has happened with that. Former ECW wrestler Pat Simon Diamond Kenny suffered a mild stroke, and I think he has recovered fully from that. And Claudio Castagnoli, at this point a free agent, filed the trademark for Cesaro, C-S-R-O, is a style on that. And again, it was assumed he was going to hit the indies or do something, but obviously later on he would join AEW. But yeah, at this point he was still a free agent. Thoughts about any of that?
After burying Joey Janela earlier in the show, I would like to say that I have great respect for the way that he books these spring break cards.
It's great. They're weird and it's great.
Yep.
We need you like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's absolute freak show kind of bookings. And I love the way that he puts those shows together. And Minoru Suzuki versus Too Cold Scorpio. I saw Too Cold Scorpio this year on an indie show in Iowa, because of course. And he still hit the moonsault. Very cool to see Too Cold Scorpio live in 2022.
That was during your Hall of Fame weekend, right?
Yeah, it was. Yes,
that's right. That's right. And the best of the rest here. Johnny Gargano was announced for a WrestleCon appearance. Again, he was a free agent still at the time. Brandi Rhodes partnering with Diga Studios for a Shot of Brandy TV show. Never seen an episode of that. Mickey James was announced to make her GCW debut at Spring Break 6. Young Bucks versus El Hijo del Vikingo and Free Phoenix. Hardy Boys versus Dragon Lee and Drillistico were set for AAA's Triple Mania. One of the three they had this year. J.J. Dillon, Kevin Sullivan appeared on ABC's Judge Steve Harvey show. WrestleCon Super Show, they announced this. They're going to announce a $5,000 award for the best match of the night. Fans could vote on that. A headline that seemed to work in 2022, Ric Flair cannabis products to be marketed by Mike Tyson's company. Buff Bagwell, part of Spring Break 6 as well, part of the Battle Royal. And then this is kind of fitting, given the news, Kane Velasquez, former AAA wrestler and two-time WWE wrestler, roster member, arrested following a shooting, again, allegedly shooting into a truck after a chase. One of the people in the truck allegedly molested his son or his child and a child of another relative. He was arrested for that on attempted murder. And then as we record this, as of today, a judge, he's out on $1 million bail, and he is going to work AAA's December show in Tempe, Arizona, because why not?
Damnedest story I ever heard in my life.
It's crazy.
I don't know how this plays out. Like, as far as justifiable reasons for trying for being arrested for attempted murder, a relative, you know, standing up for a relative being molested, how will a jury look at that? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the damnedest thing. Every time I scroll social media, drastically shifting gears here, I see Ric Flair and Mike Tyson smoking weed. just kind of very strange culture we built for ourselves here in 2022.
It is. It's something, man. It's something.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's about all I got on that list there.
Well, Ethan, my friend, we have run through the list. That was a big list for March. All kinds of stuff that happened. Before I let you go and before I get to your plugs, any predictions for 2000, let me rephrase this. Is there any single wrestler or promotion or story that you are thinking about for this, this 2023 that you're most interested in or people should watch?
I'm most interested in how WrestleMania plays out. They got 2 nights in Los Angeles. Are they going to try to book Roman and The Rock for one night and Austin and somebody for another night? Will Steve Austin wrestle again? Will they finally be able to get The Rock to commit to the Roman Reigns match? That's just kind of the stuff that I'm thinking only a few months ahead to WrestleMania, and I'm curious to see how all that plays out.
Mm, me too. And again, before we let you go, let's get some plugs in where people can read you. They can hear you. They can feel Ethan Rare, the floor and the microphone as you're holding in your hand is yours.
Well, thank you, Josh. You can find me on Twitter at Ethan Renner. You can find me on Instagram at Ethan Renner. You can hear me at on the Wrestling Life podcast. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter at TWL_podcast. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at TWL_podcast. We record most weeks. And my brother Liam and I do a show and we talk about WWE and AEW and all that good stuff. The first and still the only wrestling podcast. So The Wrestling Life, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, et cetera, and you can read me most days at f4wonline.com/wrestlingobserver.com.
Very good. Good stuff. Well, Ethan, happy to have you still part of the team and contributing and doing all the good things you're doing. And someday, F-O-R, Frasier Observer Radio. I believe it's going to happen. I know you do, and we're gonna find the right person. Yeah, it's gonna be huge, and then you're gonna be sitting in that very desk that's behind you. I can feel it with the old with the old Tandy computer and everything.
That's right, from your lips to God's ears.
Ethan Renner, thanks so much.
Josh, thanks for having me.
All right. Big thanks to all you for listening. Big thanks to Ethan Renner, of course, for stopping by. Again, that was, how many would I say that was again? 552 headlines reviewed. The work I do for all of you listeners. You know what I mean? It's a lot. I do this painstakingly for you. But yeah, it is, I say this every time. It's amazing the amount of things that we forget that seem really important at the time. And of course, you know, they just kind of end up floating into the ether because there's more stuff that happens every single day in pro wrestling. But that was a crazy month. But there's more crazy months ahead. So April, these initially were supposed to come out last week, but, you know, holidays and all that stuff and a little bit of laziness. However, April is Ari in the Can. Andrew Thompson and I from Post Wrestling. That's right. He made his return. We talked for 2 hours about April, and it's quite something. I think it's really good and very similar to our conversation last year, but it's one you can listen to over the weekend, of course. That'll be out on Thursday or Friday, I believe Thursday. And then, we're just going to keep on going. Probably about two a week. And then the Year in Review MMA series is going to begin in December as well. So probably doing a few weeks of three podcasts in a given week. How about that? I'm trying to get ahead of these recording sessions for the next week. Jesse Collings is returning we're recording a show later this week for next week. So we're off and running. Paul Fontaine's all set to do a Year in Review MMA series. So yeah, looking forward to some good stuff coming up here in a very, very, very busy December. So hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. My hot water tank started leaking the night before Thanksgiving. That was really awesome. If you have an old hot water heater, I will always make a suggestion buy a sensor that you can put underneath that will alert you if water is leaking out. Luckily, we did that and we caught it pretty early. And it's a very expensive item that's being put in as I speak right now. So lucky me, but things are good. But yeah, that'd be my house advice for any of you, for people that own houses now or in the future. But I'm going to call it good from there. So big thanks to all you for listening. Thanks to Ethan Renner. And we'll talk to you later this week for April with Andrew Thompson of Post Wrestling. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.